This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Craig Bolanos joins us, co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. I'll give you the website for them in just a minute. Craig, welcome back. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hey, I am doing fantastic, and what exciting times in the market, especially with the jobless claims falling below 400,000 for the first time since the early days of the pandemic in 2020.
Yeah, I guess that would be reason to celebrate, although once upon a time that would have been crushing news, but that's the new version of good, isn't it?
Yeah, the market moves. All things are relative to expectations, and you're correct. We're moving into a new normal as this economy opens up, and you're right, John. It's a new normal for the data when we look at these year-over-year comparisons. Well, what used to be bad is now to be celebrated.
Well, Craig, before you came on, I said, so I'm persuaded now that nothing is going to dissuade the markets from going up. Right? Like terrible job numbers, good job numbers relative to the state we're in right now. But it just seems to me like nothing is going to cool these markets.
It has been really, really tough for this market to take one step backwards, right? I mean, right now today, we're trading, 1.5% off the all-time highs. You see some of the meme stocks, maybe we even talk about that today in this business hour, like AMC, nothing can derail. And you're right. For a lot of investors, we sit here right now saying to ourselves, what's the catalyst to finally bring this market down? Is it going to be inflation? Is it going to be interest rates? Is it going to be a variant? But right now, we just remind investors, new highs tend to make new highs. The trend is your friend. And while it's tough to find value in the market, it appears that we might be forming what I call not just a recovery, but forming an economic expansion. And that could provide some tailwind for some time to come.
What does that mean? What's an economic expansion?
Well, right now, when I just think of expansion, we've all been focused on recovery, 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 trying to get back to where we were prior to the pandemic happening. But, the coronavirus really ushered in what I call, it pulled forward almost a decade worth of changes. And I think business, in terms of capital expenditure and the leadership teams and a lot of these publicly corporations, are really focused on the future and what they're going to be doing to drive revenue. And we might just be in for an economic expansion where everybody could be participating. And I think that's good news for investors especially.
Still, there has to be a ceiling, though, right? I mean, whatever goes up does come down. I wonder when that is going to happen. How drastically will it happen? What's the correction going to look like, and when's it going to come?
Well, no one knows when the market's going to correct, but we all know that corrections are a healthy and ongoing part of normally functioning markets. And the reality is, I think there's a big showdown right now for analysts and everybody. Everyone is wondering, in fact, some are nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, as to whether or not this inflation concept that we are all seeing in real life, the price at the pump, the price at the grocery store, the price for lumber, the price for all these goods and services, is it going to be proving that it's transitory, or is inflation really here to stay and the Fed's behind the curve? And I think that is probably the elephant in the room for a lot of investors. But if you say, again, what's going to get this market to finally correct, what's really going to cause it to go down, it's probably the same thing that always makes it go down, which is this: bull markets die. They tend to die with resounding enthusiasm. And at the point in time that everybody is overly enthusiastic, This thing is going to snap back. And I don't think we're there yet based on the trillions of dollars in cash that are probably still on the sideline, the action we see in the bond market. But yes, I think investors of all shapes and sizes, while we're celebrating these rallies, people do need to be careful as they put money to work, especially if they're putting money to work for some first-time investors in these meme stocks. You might just be prepared, need to be prepared rather, to lose it all.
Well, you mentioned a moment ago that it's hard to find value in the market right now. What are you talking about there?
Well, when we're talking about value, I really think people need to be focused not just on what worked last year, right? And of course, what worked for everybody last year was investing in technology, investing in healthcare, investing again in consumer discretionary. I really think a lot of these cyclical names, the cyclical industries, what we call the reflation trade, it still has legs based on valuations, everything else. I think financials in particular show an incredible amount of, you know, what I call interest for investors, even though a lot of the big banks have already had strong moves to the upside this year. Those banks doing well on the forecast for higher interest rates that we've been seeing, leading to what I call increase NIM and net interest margin. But I want to make sure investors are really balancing their portfolios, meaning they're allocated both to those technology names that have worked in the past, but making sure they have what's traditionally been that value side of the ledger, those cyclical and reflation trades. We need to have both if we're going to continue to have success in 2021.
Really interesting thoughts there, Craig Balanos, the co-founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. They're in Inverness in Downers Grove. Invest with WMG.com is the website. Craig, nice to talk to you. Let's have a conversation like this again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you much.
Jason Heiner joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, editorial director at CNET.com. Jason, thanks for joining us on WGN.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with Amazon Prime Day. It's been kind of hard to keep track of this. Where is that now and what will it be like this year?
Yeah, Amazon Prime Day. So this year, it is back to being a summer event. It was typically a July event that was always a way for Amazon to kind of clear out before the fall shopping season started. It was a way to clear out kind of the last year's products before the new ones sort of come and really get some good deals on some good stuff. Last year, it was, of course, in the fall. And that was because of all the delays for COVID. Amazon was, of course, deluged with so many people using e-commerce to have things delivered. And so that got the event pushed later. So we are getting back to a little normalcy this year. It's June 21st and 22nd. So the first day of summer officially. And it probably is going to be more so the way it used to be, in that this is going to be a way to get your last chance at some products that could be refreshed in the fall with new versions, but are really capable and will be likely on sale for some good deals. And then it's also important to note that since Amazon has officially announced its Prime Day for those dates, that Target and Walmart have also announced competing sales at the same time.
Oh, at the same time. So that'll be interesting. Everybody will be talking about, in the case of Amazon, it's 48 hours, so it'll be a couple days where everybody's just going to be talking about and spending money, huh?
That's true. And then, you know, there's often some pre-sales that start ahead of time, and then there's some deals that will also last a little bit after the 48 hours, where they'll still keep some of those deals going for another day or two here and there.
I'm reading on your site some of the items that you can anticipate will be deeply discounted. The Echo family of speakers and displays, Ring security devices, very popular. Fire products, TVs, sticks, tablets, stuff like that. Anything else I should maybe be holding off if I can wait until Prime Day?
Yeah, all of those Amazon products, because obviously they can discount those deeply because they're their own products, although they don't make a lot of profit margin on those things already. But yes, definitely any Amazon product that you're thinking about buying right now, wait until then. So that includes the Echo speakers, any Alexa devices, any Fire TV stick, any Fire tablets, Kindle readers, all the Ring devices, and then Eero, the internet routers, their Eero internet routers, any of those as well that you use to maybe upgrade your internet. And then things like Instant Pots, headphones, Roku devices, like a streaming box to connect to watch Netflix on your TV, even like Apple AirPods and other headphones are also probably pretty popular during that time as well.
Good to know. June 21st, 22nd, so a few weeks away. Let's talk a little bit about the former President Trump's official blog. That wasn't taken down, but they just voluntarily quit doing it, huh?
Yeah, they closed it down. So they essentially they were hoping to replace the Twitter feed, which was, of course, shut down because of the events surrounding the January 6th riot at the Capitol. And so the hope was that this would raise a similar kind of level of attention, and that just never happened. So a month after trying that, essentially this live Twitter feed on a website in a blog format, they've shut it down just because of lack of interest, essentially. Yeah.
They being the president's team, I noticed that they said it was auxiliary. At least Jason Miller was saying something along the lines of, well, we never intended it for to be that much. But when I heard that the president was blogging, I thought, well, that's very 1990s of him, A. And also, he's not been a long-form communicator. His best communications were short bursts, either in front of a microphone or, you know, punching away on his phone. It's just not a format that favors his skill set, right?
Yeah, and I think that this blog was in quotes because it was shorter form communications, like Twitter. I'd say it was more like Twitter than like traditional blogs, but not being in the, you know, it's like when you go fishing, right? You have to fish where the fish are. And so on Twitter, that's where people are and they're hanging out, and you say something, and it's obviously competing with a lot of other people, but it's also in the stream of where people are paying attention. When people have to go to a different URL to go look something up, you know, part of it was just that there just weren't enough people interested in going and checking it out.
Your colleague Ian Schur said that Microsoft, last we visited, is going to change what Windows looks like, and you're going to hate it, and then you'll get used to it. What's news on that front?
Yeah, so there is now an official event that's set for June 24th. Microsoft is going to unveil the latest version of Windows. It could be Windows 11. There's a little bit of a hint in the image that they sent out as an invite for this event that there's some shadows coming out of the window that looks like essentially like an 11. If you squint a little bit. So, and it's also at 11 a.m. The event itself.
But so wait a minute. Well, what's the one we're using now? What is the next number in the sequence? Aren't we due?
Yeah, it's 10. Windows 10. So Windows 11 would be the next one in the sequence.
Yeah. And what do you say to the people who say it's not broke, don't fix it? However much better you might make 11 or 10, I'm pretty comfortable with the functionality of the one I have. So how advisable is it that they do this?
Yeah, well, it's a matter of how different. So if it's something, you know, they've been burned pretty badly by these big, very ambitious changes to Windows in the past. That's almost never gone well for them. And so I would expect and I would hope, for the sake of consumers and users, that they will make this as an incremental change. There'll be some nice new features, some nice, you know, visuals mm-hmm. that make it look nicer, but that all the functionality, if you're used to using it in a certain way now, that most of that will remain the same. Those tend to be the upgrades that do the best. And that users have the easiest time adapting to.
Yeah, I hope it looks enough like what I'm used to. Yeah, make it better, but don't make me learn a whole new language. Jason Heiner is the editorial director at CNET. You can find more reporting like this at CNET.com. Hey, Jason, thanks for helping us out today. It's good to hear you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Philip Weiss is, too, the president of Seyfarth at Work, Seyfarth.com, spelled SEYFARTH.com. Hey, Philip, thanks for joining us again. You're on WGN.
Thanks for having me, John.
Usually I can anticipate some of the things that you think we should pay a little attention to. Let me read the first sentence of your message to our producer. Millions of Americans are now getting their job and financial advice from 20-something internet personalities on platforms such as TikTok and Instagram. Okay, I didn't see that one coming, Philip.
Yeah, neither did a lot of the clients and companies that we work with, which is why we've been getting the word out, so to speak. Unbeknownst to these bosses, and they're often blindsided, they're competing with the social media platforms in terms of what employees, even applicants, think is good career advice. And what's really sort of eye-opening and in some cases alarming is that most of the people that are posting this career advice, these career tips, themselves have little in the way of management experience or human resource experience. They're often people with filmmaking degrees or with creative arts background because it's the compelling video that appeals to the Generation X, the newest employees and professionals, not the stuff that they understand will give them the best road forward.
What's an example? I can't imagine. I mean, I guess you could say, hey, here's a tip, and it might take a few seconds, but tell me what they're getting that does or doesn't make sense.
Yeah, quite a lot. And I should preface by saying, John, there's a lot of advice there that's credible enough because a lot of the job advice has been recycled year in, year out. But about 25% of what we're seeing on these platforms is questionable, if not entirely misleading. And we first were tuned into this issue because one of our clients said, I was wondering why this new employee thought it was a good idea to ask me for a raise several times over a 3-month span. And so the boss asked the employee, where did you get that idea, that notion? And the employee says, well, but both Instagram and TikTok personalities who I rely on told me to do so. And in some cases, you'll see videos, one TikToker, as they're called, with over 1 million followers, posted a video which touted the primary benefit of exuding total confidence in the job interview, which was much more important than understanding the business, knowing what their operations were, or who you were meeting. So you're getting a lot of advice that sounds appealing, but in fact is misleading.
Well, talk a little bit about those two examples, though. Sometimes this squeaky wheel does get the oil. I don't know when or how often you should ask for a raise. What do you say about that, Philip?
Yeah, well, the idea is this. You're right. You want to advocate for yourself. But several times over the course of the same year, once you've been, or in this case it was less than a year, once you've been given your performance review, rationale for what your compensation looks like is not going to be well received. Obviously, if one doesn't think they're being paid what they're worth, once you've advocated, once you've given it a reasonable time period, maybe wait for the next pay cycle, you don't want to be sitting back and not looking for alternatives. But that was one of those examples where there's no question the advice was way off the mark. And it's really interesting because it seems like the young professionals who are going online, they are so comfortable relying on what they see, and they vet with each other information they get from these platforms. They don't go to their boss. 20 years ago, we would go to perhaps an experienced relative or a school counselor, even a book, which sounds like an artifact now, on career steps. Today, it's really looking at videos and then looking at the comments that people just like you have posted, and that solidifies one's decision. This is the right way to go.
Is that on the bosses too, though? Maybe you should convey when you do or don't give a raise to someone, when's the next time to ask? I mean, give them some protocol.
Absolutely. I mean, part of this is the boss's responsibility in two ways. First of all, being proactive in terms of what you want from people so they don't go looking for advice or input from these questionable sources. Part of it is letting your employees know, you know what, I've spent 20 minutes online surfing, putting in the search terms career advice and the platform, and I see the kind of advice that's out there. If you're online and you're getting advice, you're always welcome to come to me if it seems questionable or you are wondering, is this the right way to go at our company? So this notion that you want to balance the traditional advice you give with the reliance on the tech that these employees are going to gravitate towards, that's great advice for a boss. So it's proactive, and to some extent, it can be reactive if you let your employees know. And then it's on the employees as well. They have got to realize, if I see something, I should step up and double check with someone I trust at work. Is this going to work here at this particular environment, at this company? Right.
Well, a colleague once came up to me, and it wasn't that long ago, and said, I haven't gotten a raise in a while. What do you think? What should I say? What should I do? And I don't remember what the exact advice was that I passed along, but I thought it was too bad that they didn't know how and when to best approach someone about it. You know, how is the company doing? What's the lay of the land? What's the position? You know, how empowered is that person you're going to go to and have a sense of the wherewithal of the company? But that's kind of a guessing game for some of us. So maybe I'll just make this point one last time. It would be incumbent upon the employers to say, hey, listen, here's your job review. You didn't get a raise this time, but let's revisit in 6 months. And then I wouldn't pester you, right?
Yes. And I also think, I agree with you. I also think the employer's feedback should provide something of a roadmap to the employee, meaning the employer should talk about how the company's doing, the employee's contributions, where the employee can do better. That information needs to come from the manager. And if it doesn't, sadly, it's the employees have got to create their own blueprint for what to say, which is really the mirror image, which is, I see what we've accomplished. Here's my part, my contributions. Here's what my job is worth in the market because I've done that research. And this is what I think, therefore, I'm worth as a part of your team. So you're right. The roadmap should really come from the boss. But if not, the employee must sort of pave their own path for that request.
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work, SeyFarth.com. Thanks, Philip. We'll visit again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, John.
It's 12:45 on WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Abbott Laboratories is cutting several thousand employees from its rapid COVID-19 test manufacturing and assembly facility in Gurnee. A steep decline in demand is the reason behind the decision. About 2,000 workers were told this week their assignments had ended at the plant. Millions of Abbott's Binax Now tests were made and assembled at the 255,000-square-foot facility at 605 Tri-State Parkway. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. It's time for Steve Alexander.
Johnny, it's a big day on our Farm to Your Belly calendar. It is National Egg Day. Over easy for me, please. You'll need eggs to celebrate National Chocolate Macaroon Day. And without corn, there would be no National Moonshine Day. It's also grilling season, which this weekend especially with the hot weather, which brings us to the hot dog and this man who calls himself
the hot dog top dog,
also known as Eric Mittenthal, the president of the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council. He says a survey shows 73% of Americans believe a cookout is not complete without hot dogs. And he says...
And he says something, but we're not hearing it. There it is.
20 billion hot dogs.
Wow.
During the summer grilling season, which runs from Memorial Day to Labor Day, people eat about 7 billion. So that's a third of the hot dogs that are eaten all year are eaten just during that summer prime season.
And back to the survey, 75% say grilling is their favorite way to cook a hot dog. Over a campfire is number two. And as for what goes...
far behind, which I know is very controversial in Chicago. We're not big fans of ketchup on hot dogs for adults, but a lot of people love it.
And after mustard and ketchup come onions, relish, chili, cheese, sauerkraut, mayo, bacon, jalapenos, and coleslaw. But let's talk about that dog. What exactly is in it?
Well, what you see is what you get. What you get on the package, there's an ingredient statement, and the ingredients will list out specifically what's in the hot dog. There's a lot of mythology out there about different things that go into hot dogs, but it's not true. It's a myth, and manufacturers are required to list the exact ingredients on the package. And for folks who want to know more about the ingredients in a hot dog, we have an ingredients guide on our website at hot-dog.org.
There he goes, the hot dog top dog. In terms of the various toppings, I'd say the Chicago dog is probably in a category of its own. At the Chicago Board of Trade, a sell-off is underway, crop conditions and weather related, as wheat right now is trading down about 15 cents. Beans are down 17. Corn is down 18 cents a bushel. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us now. Lots to talk about. I'm fascinated by this United Airlines supersonic story. Amy, why don't you catch us up?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this story, too. I think it's so very interesting. So United has committed to buying 15 ultra-fast planes from a startup called Boom Supersonic. They are carbon net zero aircraft. So there's kind of two benefits here. One is on a flight, say, from New York to London, about 6 or 7 hours, you'd get there in about 3.5 hours. But add in this carbon net zero aspect, and it's even more compelling, I think. So they said they're buying 15 planes from them with the option to buy 35 more at some point. They're targeting the start of passenger service with these planes in 2029. I wish it was sooner because I'm so fascinated by this. But they would fly at Mach 1.7. And so a lot of flight times would be cut in half. Really, really interesting here. So this is a startup. Supersonic was they're based out of Denver. They've raised $270 million in capital. They have about 150 workers. And they were founded in 2014. They've been kind of under the radar ever since then. But that's a significant amount of capital. So we shall see more from them, I'm sure, after this announcement from United.
Boom Supersonic. I've never heard of them.
Yeah, I know. And it's like the name of it even sounds kind of fun, right? It doesn't seem like this very serious aeronautic company. But yeah, Boom Supersonic is the name of them. And they've been kind of working quietly. And they, you know, they in a statement, the leadership was kind of talking about the Concorde and how, you know, what benefit that made to flight and time, traveling times and things like that, but mm-hmm. adding in the carbon factor and the environmental factor and what this could mean for the aviation industry was so very compelling.
I assume they wouldn't all just be New York to Paris or New York to London, although that's the route that they frequently talk about. It'd be nice to know if I could get to LA in about 30 minutes or something like that.
Right.
I asked Pete to look up what 1.7 Mach is, and he said that's 1,300 miles an hour.
It's darn fast. It's what
you know,
the
thing about the Concorde, though, I never flew on one, but I seem to understand that that was famously uncomfortable, too. It was very narrow. It wasn't luxurious. You weren't in there a long time, but it wasn't a wide-body jet by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. They were, it was a much thinner plane and I think a lot more people kind of squished in there. Not exactly the picture of luxury that maybe we think of when we talk about that kind of plane. But yeah, I'm with you. I think it'd be really interesting to see what the flights they're targeting. United said that they're expecting to really put these into play on those long haul flights. They mentioned San Francisco to Tokyo and New York to Paris, things like that. But I think mm-hmm. that would really change international travel significantly if we're looking at really short flight times.
Boy, if you know anybody that's traveled to Australia from Chicago,
yeah.
that's a day. And most of it is in the air. And really, it's almost 2 days by the time you get to and from the two airports. Talk to me about overdraft fees. What's happening there?
Yeah, so Ally Bank has made a really bold move that's kind of rattled the banking industry, and that is they have cut overdraft fees. They're just not happening across their entire business. That's not a thing. To them, they said this is kind of what's referred to as like the $38 cup of coffee. You know, you swipe your debit card for a $3 cup of coffee and you end up with this $35 overdraft fee if you didn't time your checks quite right. If your, you know, paycheck was delayed, something like that hitting your bank. So they also believe that this is part of the reason why some people from lower socioeconomic groups remain unbanked, meaning they use like the paycheck cashing kind of places that take a bigger cut of their pay to do that. That, you know, charge fees for that and don't have banking in their lives to help build wealth and get some financial stability. So they have just cut this. They said, overdraft fees can be a major cause of anxiety. We're just not going to do it. So they have cut that. They said it became clear to us the best way to relieve that anxiety was to eliminate those fees. So that affects about 3.6 million checking, savings, and money market accounts, according to the bank. That's a lot of customers, I'm sure, perhaps are breathing a little easier that perhaps we're cutting it close on certain days of the month with their check hitting the bank.
Just a little over half a minute, Amy. Just talk about what Twitter's doing with the subscription service.
Yeah, so people have been asking for the ability to edit tweets for a very long time. Twitter sort of kind of is allowing that. So users in Australia and Canada, that's where they're testing this, can pay a monthly fee to organize the tweets that they save by topic. You can use a reader mode to read the long threads a little bit easier, customize the Twitter app on their phone and the icon, and have a limited amount of time to edit a tweet and to preview it before they hit send. So we will see. About 86 or 7% of Twitter's revenue comes from ads. So we'll see if this subscription model adds to Twitter's revenue.
$10, is that it? $10?
It's I think a little over $4 in Australia and about $3.50 in Canada.
Okay, fair enough. We'll talk again. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.